It's a very special Christmas showdown between Bon Jovi and Sting. We're talking Backdoor Santa and Gabriel's Message. Hit it! It was 1987. Alan Greenspan became chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Los Lobos sang Richie Valens' La Bamba. The year was shortened by 1 second to adjust to the Gregorian calendar, and Bon Jovi and Sting were part of a benefit album for the Special Olympics. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now joining me is a very special guest. You'll know her as one of the hosts of the Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe podcast, Ricky Meese. Ricky, how's it going?
Hey, Jerry. Thanks for having us on. I really appreciate it. And I love talking Christmas music of all styles, but particularly you and I have a passion for the 80s. So I'm great to be. It's great to be here today.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks for coming so much. I like your show. I really loved your episode with Rick Goldschmidt. He's a friend of mine. Yes. And so, you know, it was great. And of course, you guys have been doing the really cool stuff with the COVID Christmas thing. You know, I mean, in this year, more than ever, I think we really have to do our best to keep the Christmas spirit alive.
Christmas Cures for the COVID Blues. It is a series that we just recently launched, and we're getting a little bit of traction with that because our first episode dealt with Christmas music. And music does lift the spirit. It brightens your mood. It has the ability to really take you somewhere when you need to escape what's really going on in real life. So yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, exactly. You're completely right. I mean, I'm a musician. I was in band. I was a band director for a while, and then I gigged around a little bit.
You listen with critical ears.
So yeah, sometimes I try not to, but you know,
it's hard not to. Yeah,
we can't help it. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I work at a Christmas store now, and it's one of the best jobs in the world. I get to listen to Christmas music all the time. I'm surrounded by Christmas lights, and it's so happy and fun. And yeah, you're right. There is something about Christmas music in particular, music in general, but Christmas music in particular that just makes you smile.
It's nostalgic.
Yeah.
It spurs those memories of when you were a child or a particular Christmas when, you know, something special happened. It brings back memories. It gets you in the, you'll find yourself toe tapping or just kind of bouncing along or humming or singing along with it without even really realizing that you're doing it. So it's good. It's really good.
that's exactly right. My very first episode was with my brothers, and we talked about the Time Life Treasury of Christmas from 1986.
Oh,
and it was something that once we got, we had to listen to it every year. And so there were like certain moments. So when we were decorating the tree,
yes,
Christmas Eve, Christmas morning, we would always listen to the Time Life. And so now it's to the point where my youngest brother, like, if it's not Christmas unless he listens to the Time Life Treasury of Christmas. So
it becomes part of our lives. It really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You're right. It's in a way that very few other things.
Mm-hmm.
Think, but
we had albums like that. Of course, I say albums, so that kind of dates me, but it was pre-tape. But when I was growing up, there were those that you say, the time, mine were probably Bing Crosby. My mother loved some from her era, what I would today call the vintage crooners.
Oh,
and
nice.
That for me, mm-hmm. Yes, there were Christmas, whether you're decorating the tree, fixing Christmas dinner, baking cookies, or whatever. And I had this little neighborhood group of friends that I don't know what I was thinking of, Jerry, but the day after Thanksgiving, I would round them all up and we would start practicing Christmas caroling. And I would take, now you have to realize we were maybe 11, 12, 13.
Nice.
I'd take all these group of kids around our little neighborhood singing Christmas carols. But that's the memories and the music all tied up together. It's a wonderful experience.
That, yeah, that is really cool. We, growing up, we also went Christmas caroling, my family and I. So it was, my dad would play guitar and then my brothers and I would sing. And then once we all were started to be trained in, you know, in music in general, then we'd start to do the harmonies. And then we kind of laugh because each year we'd say we were going to practice. And, you know, so about an hour before we'd get together and then we just kind of fought about whether or not we were going to practice. And then we'd go out. And so then the youngest brother and I, because we're higher tenors than the middle brother, we would generally both end up start doing the upper harmony and then we just kind of laugh. And so then one of us would jump up higher to.
How'd that work out for you on Oh Holy Night on that real
high? It was fun. Yeah, a little falsetto didn't hurt, but, you know, it's, you're right. It's one of those things where you just, it grows with you. And, so now my mom's staying with us, for a bit, to watch the kids, you know, because of the whole staying at home to learn.
Yeah.
And so we decided we're going to go Christmas caroling up here. And it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah.
You know, I think it's like we were talking about the whole COVID Christmas 2020. I think we're going to see a lot of old traditions make a comeback. I think people are going to start driving around the neighborhoods looking at Christmas lights while listening to Christmas music.
Yep.
I think there's going to be a surge in sending Christmas cards. We know there will be a surge in Christmas packages, but I think Christmas cards, the actual hard copies, are going to make a comeback and people are going to reach out that way. And I think Christmas caroling may be one of those things that we see more of this year. Because you'll be at a distance, but you'll still be sharing the Christmas spirit. I think it's wonderful. I think that's great.
Yeah.
It, are you going to take instruments with you as well?
We'll probably just bring my guitar. In general, it normally my dad would play, and I know, you know, it's fun to dress up in the whole Victorian and do the full four part stuff. But I think just because it's more of an impromptu kind of idea that my mom just kind of had the other day, I really doubt it'll be.
Some of the best Christmas tunes were started or sung and performed with just a guitar.
That's like true.
Silent Night. So I think you're on the right track with that.
Yeah. Either way, it'll be fun. And I know because out of my family, if it's just us, like if my brothers don't get to come up, I probably have the strongest voice. So they're probably going to want me to do melody, which is a shame because I always prefer singing harmony, actually. I think it adds more and it's just more interesting a lot of times. And
it does.
So we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll be strong enough that, you know, all together that I can just do a quick harmony.
You've got the right spirit about you. So it'll all come together. I have no doubt. That's the thing about the Christmas spirit. It can make the smallest thing appear so much grander in real life. So I think it's going to be great. You need to tape it and post it so we can all see it.
we'll see. we'll talk about it. But.
Okay.
But today we're actually talking about 1987 in particular and the very special Christmas album. So we're not going to stick to that. We'll go into other things as well. But mostly I wanted to talk about, because when we were discussing topics to go over, you kind of mentioned how you really loved Bon Jovi and you were not such a Sting and Police fan. And so I thought, what a perfect time to do like a versus Christmas showdown. Yeah.
Right. I don't want all the haters to come at me at once. I just want to put that out there.
No. And I know what you mean. I mean, I love the Police. I do. I love the Police. I love Sting, but I sometimes for some of their songs, I have to be in the right mood.
Yeah.
Like I can't just turn on Synchronicity and just listen to the whole album straight. You know,
Police first came out, you know, I'm like, wow, that's an unusual sound. And I was listening to it, and it was particularly Roxanne. And you know how he goes on that slide in that higher, you know, and then the meaning of the song, everything behind it. And I thought, well, it's a top hit song, so it's okay. But they came out with some ones later that it was like, oh my gosh, no. Like the dude, what was that? The dude... that song, all he does is syllables in it. The do, 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 the
dog. Oh, yeah. I think that's the name of the song. Yeah.
But I'm like, that's kind of lame. I'm like, you're a professional. Put some serious lyrics in there, you know, but whatever. It was another hit. And I thought, okay, the Police are just kind of sliding down on
I gotcha. Yeah.
I didn't totally dislike them. but they were nowhere near any of my favorites.
Right, right.
And then when Sting left and went out on his own, I often thought he has such an unusual voice. It's not what we would typically hear. And I thought that could be an advantage or a disadvantage, depending on the song, the arrangement. Mm-hmm. But I think Sting nails it when it comes to slower songs. And here's the thing. I can remember hearing, I think I was listening to Christmas music on the radio, actually. Mm-hmm. And you get all these different upbeat, happy songs. And then Gabriel's Message came on. Mm. And it totally takes you out of that setting. You cannot listen to that in a nice, clear, vacant room and really listen to it without being taken to a different time. It has almost a medieval feel. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think it's from the 13 or 1400s, the song originally.
It is,
it
you're
reminds
right.
reminds yeah. me of a monastery where monks would be chanting, or if it were female, maybe a nunnery where the nuns are singing their songs, and they have that very clear tone, that chant. And like you say, the harmonies in that mm-hmm. song take you to a different level. And it's a different song altogether than what I had normally heard him sing.
Yeah,
so, for sure. He got my attention with that. So, and if I look at one of the videos, if I remember the video correctly, it's almost ethereal. Now, the Police, if I remember correctly, they were known for putting out videos. And this was the time of MTV. So you got to mm-hmm. think, artists were having to jump on this bandwagon, whether they wanted to or not, in order right. to get a hit. So not just releasing the record, they also had to do a video. Well, mm-hmm. one of the videos actually told the story of the song. And the Police, their videos weren't anything really like that. They gave images, but they didn't want to interfere with what I would have perceived as my creative process of what that song meant. And so what was crazy was I'm looking at this video and that ethereal feel, and it has lace kind of what I presume are girls dancing around as what would be angels. Mm-hmm. And then in the center, you see this dark image of a man and you think, okay, well, that's Gabriel and his choir of angels coming to make this announcement. But by the end of the video, who is it?
Not Gabriel.
It's not Gabriel. I don't want to give it away, but I'm like, whoa, that, you know, I'm like, he got me. He really got me on that. So between the song being resurrected from another time to putting his own twist on it musically as well as visually, that got me thinking, I've got to check out more of Sting's Christmas music. And he mm-hmm. does have more.
He does. And yeah.
Christmas he does. Album. And I like most of them, not necessarily all of them, but I do like most of them. So that was it for me for Gabriel's Message and how Sting suddenly went from being so-so and not so much a favorite to like, whoa, okay, he's got my respect with this song. So.
Yeah, the Police, you know, they were together from 77 to 84. And when they actually first started out, they had more of a punk new
yes.
vibe.
And what I would call new wave then, alternative rock.
Or, yeah, something
yeah,
like that. Yeah,
coming over from England, that whole phase. Yeah.
They kind of really developed like this reggae pop kind mm-hmm. of style, which is, you know, certainly different at the time for real. Yeah. And it, I mean, I remember hearing Wrapped Around Your Finger.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were talking about their videos and, you know, it's, that's mostly just him dancing in like a big thing of candles.
Yeah. Yeah.
and
which, you know, if you think about it, is brilliant because it was a low budget shoot.
It was. Yeah. For real. You could save a lot of money that way. Totally. But, you know, it's like, you're right. Those little images just kind of stick out a lot. And he kind of pioneered something that was different. I know the Andy Summers,
yeah,
the guitarist, he plays with a lot of ninths in his music. So he'll use, you know, not only the power chord, but then he'll throw in the ninth above it. And so it just mm-hmm. gives it harmonically. It's more mm-hmm. full. It's more interesting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can hear that especially on like Message in a Bottle. Mm-hmm. Things like that. And so he uses these chord formations where he's really spreading his hand like wide open. I mean, it's just, they're really great and I love it. But at the same time, yeah, you're right. Something about Sting's vocals and his voice, it just, it makes it a little more,
I tell you,
out of this world. Yeah.
The trick is, and I was taught this years ago when I was in college for broadcasting, and I think I may have shared this once on the Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe Christmas podcast, but we were told when we were in one of my classes about delivery and announcing and reading and everything like that, the lower tones are more comfortable on the human ear. So when we hear some of those high notes, it's not an unnatural thing for us to kind of cringe a little bit. And if you think about it, it's like, I don't know, have you ever heard of a really high-pitched woman talking a nasally voice and you're just like, ooh, or fingernails on a chalkboard. It's, you know, you just kind of, it's somewhere in between there. But when Sting, and he does it in some of these Christmas songs, goes into his more natural range or even a little bit lower, he has a much nicer voice and it's much more appealing to me. And so I think like you, that higher range when his voice, it almost gets, I wouldn't call it squeaky or screechy, but it gets maybe thinner.
It's a little thinner, know. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I think the time I've liked it most is when he did the backing for the Dire Straits, Money for Nothing.
Yes.
You know, that I want my MTV part, you know.
That's what I know when I liked him most?
And
I want you to finish this. As the character in Dune, he played an evil
And Fade Rausa.
He's got some acting chops there. He's so believable. But no, go back to Money for Nothing. Tell me about that.
No, I just, you know, that little part, I want my MTV.
Yeah.
You know, then I always loved that song, and it took me a while before I realized that's Sting, isn't it? And
of course, no mistaking that voice. But yeah. It was years before I ever got a real solid confirmation that, yes, that is Sting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. It wasn't until I researched it later that it's like, oh, yeah, okay, so I was right. I'm not crazy. But yeah, I think, and I don't know if it's the juxtaposition against Mark Knopfler and you know, his voice there, or if it's just the way that they mixed it, because there's a certain energy, you know, certain frequency levels. I think it's around 3 or 4K where, you know, it is grating to the ear. Mm-hmm. And so depending on how they mix it, if they mix it with a lot of frequencies in that range, you know, it can make us want to turn things off. Yeah. And so I don't know if it's just maybe they doubled him, because, you know, doubling is also quite common in recordings, but something about it softened it, I think, for me.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoyed it, you know, and it's just a backing part, but I mean, I love backing parts. Like I said, they're more interesting and they add so much to a song. And when we talk about Gabriel's Message, and we'll get there in a little bit in particular. Yeah. You mentioned that the song itself is from the 13th and 14th century, but his arrangement was completely new. It was all and it was a very like early Renaissance madrigal style, which I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. But just as he's going, it's very polyphonic.
I mean,
not completely, you know, I wouldn't categorize it completely, but it's almost like a Palestrina style polyphony, which I really loved. And
I think with Gabriel's Message, Sting became a very, and I don't know the right way to describe this, maybe not religious, but a very spiritual, intuitive type person. And he, in his personal life, not that he aligns himself with any particular faith or anything like that,
but he
definitely does soul searching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I can definitely see it in some of his Christmas music. I feel like that's where I'm getting real Sting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's combining what he really feels about some things in life, along with, I think that helps generate some kind of meaning in his song that may have been lacking a little bit from what I heard in The Police. I don't know. And maybe I'm reading way too much into it. I'm not sure, maybe, but you just see him change differently over the years, his performing style, his choice of songs, and the way he delivers those songs and performs them.
Yeah.
So, that's just me.
Yeah. The hymn itself is a Basque carol, and it was a translation of a Latin hymn written in 13th, 14th century. That Basque region is fascinating. I was doing some research about it, but it's like right there, kind of catty-corner to the Pyrenees, and it's kind of right in between France and Spain. And it's like one of the only languages untouched by the Romance tongues and things like that. So it's While it is slightly Indo-European, it's almost its own thing, which is really cool. People still speak it there, depending on which region you live or inside that Basque territory. Mm-hmm. You know, it ranges from like, I think, 20% fluency to like 80% or something like that. But not quite Spanishy, not quite French. It's its own kind of thing.
It sounds like it would be a beautiful language.
It is. It's pretty neat. I just listened to a couple of recordings and there's no way I could do it, but at least not now. Maybe if I was younger and I started learning. So he just took the hymn and took the the most popular translation of it, and he added all those parts to it. And I had forgotten about this particular version until I heard Jars of Clay cover it later. I heard them do it and I thought, wait a minute, this is very familiar. And so then I went back and listened to it. And sure enough, it was Sting's arrangement. I think they just take one of the very first line up an octave or something like that in the harmony. And so, I mean, it was like, wait a minute, I know this, I know this.
And Well, and the thing about it is, I think it's truly amazing that a modern day artist can pull a song, an ancient song mm-hmm. from the, you know, medieval archives or wherever it came from, and be able to make it live today. I think it's not just talent. I think there's some kind of inspiration behind it to be able to not just bring it to life, but to do it justice without, dare I say, putting their own spin on it. And when they do that, they run the risk of making it too much of their own and kind of taking away from how it was originally supposed to be delivered. And I think he is very respectful mm-hmm. on not only just the song itself, but being able to bring some creativity into it, mixing it up in a way, harmonizing, and still making it stand up instead of making it more his. So I got to give him props for that. His vocals in it too. I mean, there are times he goes a little high, and he has one of those distinctive voices. Mm-hmm. If you hear his voice, you know it's Sting.
Yeah, yeah.
But this was one of those songs, it finally turned my head about Sting, and I thought, I've got to think about this. It reminds me of his hit Fields of Gold, where he slows things mm-hmm. down. And I'm like, gosh, he is so much better on this type of stuff than he was with the Police. And I don't say that to be derogatory, mm-hmm. but I'm thinking this is where he's hitting his stride, or at least for me as a listener, as mm-hmm. as someone being able to appreciate what he's doing. That's where I felt like, okay, now maybe I'm turning a corner on Sting and appreciating him for mixing his personal with his professional and his creativity and bringing something like this to life without destroying it in the meantime.
Yeah. So I noticed, cause in 2009, he had another album. I think it's called If on a Winter's Night. And so it's a lot of like folk, some lesser known Christmas songs and Advent and winter songs. And I only found it because I was really into Peter, Paul, and Mary at the time. Uh-huh. And so I looked up, they had that song, A Solen, which is mm-hmm. based on the, Solmas and All Hallowsmas and things like that. It's a great song. And of course, Peter, Paul, and Mary end up using it because it was also sung on Christmas and Christmas Eve. And so they end up using it with God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, one of the verses there. So I was looking for it on YouTube and I ended up finding Sting's version, although he uses just the name Soul Cake. But it's
Soul Cake, yes. Yeah. And that threw, when he, well, go ahead.
I was just going to say that it, I really like his version. It's kind of, it's a little more, I mean, there's more drive to it. Because Peter, Paul, and Mary's, of course, it's very straightforward and I love
very
it.
Folks,
theirs is more like just kind of, three people singing and that's about it. Just something you'd like get around a fireplace and it's great and I love it. But his is definitely has more of a groove to it. There's mm-hmm. kind of like a little backbeat, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
It's got that really, that descending bass line, which mm-hmm. I really enjoy. I mean, and of course the other version does too, but his, because it was a full production with a lot more orchestrations, there's something about it that just, it grabbed me a little bit more. And I really enjoyed his version. I found the rest of the album.
On that album, I do like that song, but I was really surprised that he threw in a couple of religious songs, but yet they're totally Sting just by adding his voice to them. I saw Three Ships and Lo, How a Rose Air Blooming. Yep. Now that's a lesser known one, but if it's done well, it can be a beautiful Christmas song. And he actually, you know, I think he paid tribute to that song, being again reviving an old song into a new era, into the Christmas. He also did, I want to say, Lullaby for an Anxious.
Oh yeah, for an Anxious Child.
Anxious Child. That was it. I was going to say, there's a couple of children's songs on there. Well, I think of them as children's songs. And I think that one kind of starts out with a real 80s type throwback sound, but then quickly changes
into
something different. So that was, it's like, whoa, put on the brakes here. But it's an interesting album with some of those songs. And like with any album, you know, some I'm going to really gravitate to and others may not appeal to me as much. That's a given with any of them.
Right, yeah.
But I was really, with Gabriel's Message, that has become a Christmas tradition that I've been asked a few different times, make your top 10 list of favorite Christmas songs, and I flat out can't. If I could make a top 100 list, I'd be much better off. But I would definitely say it's definitely in my top 50. And that's nothing to sneeze at, considering how far I've come from not really appreciating the Police to liking this. Mm-hmm. But it is a song that it stops you. And if you really stop and listen to it, you know, it reaches. It goes past the ears right on into the heart, which for me is great for a song, a Christmas song especially.
Yeah, I mean, if you can do that as a Christmas song, I mean, I think you've nailed it pretty much.
Yeah.
So that's Gabriel's Message, and we can talk about the lyrics in a little bit when we do a compare and contrast. But let's talk about Bon Jovi. What's your history with Bon Jovi? What are your
Oh my gosh! During the days of big hair and shoulder pads.
Oh yeah, arena rock.
Well, and I just again, this is going to date me. I was a young DJ on air when I was playing this new song. And at that time, the way our radio station was set up was, this is new music. You play this once or twice an hour or within a musical frame. This is the current top list. And these are revisited, play them every couple of hours or something.
Oh, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was how you made your musical rotation within your hour. And they had different songs in each section, and you put it in there. Well, here comes this new music song. And at first I'm thinking, okay, do I know how to pronounce this name correctly?
That's always the trouble, yeah.
And I was pretty okay about all of it, but I rarely hear a song one time and I take to it. I did with Gabriel's Message. And I did with Bon Jovi's early release of Runaway.
Runaway.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm playing this on the air, and I can remember. I remember I was a kid. Really, I had no business being on the air at that young of an age. but I remember saying something that's a new release from a new artist called Bon Jovi with Runaway. And I remember saying something like, I wonder if we're going to hear from him again and how soon.
Well, maybe a little bit. Yeah.
So he was not going to be a one-hit wonder.
No, definitely not.
He came on full strength with Slippery When Wet. And I can remember hearing some of that music, and I wanted to get up and dance. I wanted to, it spoke to me. I loved it.
Yeah.
I had a hard time with a guy whose hair was better looking than mine. Thanks to heaven. But it didn't count. His father was a hairdresser, so he had the advantage.
Yeah,
but,
that's true.
But that band, and a lot of, they took a lot of flack from supposedly real rockers, because it's not really rock music. He's pandering to the audience. I'm like, well, if I've got a band and I want to be successful, well, yeah, I want some hit records that I can go to the bank with, because it's a business. And I didn't know this at that time. I do now, that he actually is a good businessman, and he was the quarterback of that team, and he was steering it in the direction he wanted it to go. But there's so much about his music that I just automatically loved. That entire CD, I think I... Is it possible to burn out a CD? I don't think so, but I may have been close.
I think you can play it long enough that, you probably could.
Yeah, but another moment that I think of was, I can remember where I was living at the time. I was in my vehicle. I popped in that CD, and there were multiple hits on that first big CD, not Runaway, but the next big CD, mm-hmm. Slippery When Wet. And I was going down this mountain, driving down this mountain, and I had the windows rolled down and that song cranked to high heaven. I don't know how my neighbors put up with me at times, because that's the way at that time when I had young ears, I liked to listen to the music that I loved.
Right.
And that's what I was doing. I went up and down that mountain to and from work and errands in between, with the windows down and his music blasting away. I loved it. I related to it. I danced to it. I sang it. I could pick up the words easy. You know, it was, mm-hmm. it was just a good fit for me.
Well, they were all very catchy.
Yes.
They really
yes.
were. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they did tell stories, and yet, and his videos, you know, sometimes it was just him on screen.
On stage. Yeah.
On the stage. Yeah. Performing to the camera, which they were very good at. And people would say, oh, you just think he's cute, and that's why you like his music. I'm like, even if I had never seen what he had looked like, I would have liked his music. Mm-hmm. And I can say that honestly. And then he just kept coming out with stuff and yeah. more stuff and more stuff. And so it was kind of one of those things. It's like, yeah, we're going to hear from him, and we're going to hear from him
we're gonna
a lot.
We're going to keep doing it. Yep. We'll keep hearing from
and
him.
And so I felt he was pretty solid. Now, on the flip side, his Christmas song, it's not bad. It's just...
That is funny. Yeah, you kind of did a little...
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the magic of Christmas, isn't it?
It's true. Yeah, it really, really is. It can make you do crazy things sometimes. But but you're not wrong. I mean, and I love Bon Jovi, too. I mean, you know, You Give Love a Bad Name and Living on a Prayer and I'll Be There for You and Like Always and all these hits just hit.
Bad Medicine. Oh,
Bad
gosh.
Medicine, yeah.
The list goes on.
But, you know, as good as those songs are, I think are almost as bad as how his Christmas songs are. I mean, they're not bad, but just how mediocre, I'll say.
Well,
not musically, it's just there something about it, at least in this version, this particular song, because I do like that other one, Please Come Home for Christmas, that he sings.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That one's not bad, but something about this one, it's like there's an energy that's there, but it's like not the right kind of energy, I think, for Christmas.
I feel like in this song, he's trying to bring what Bon Jovi is and has become into a Christmas song, mm-hmm. whereas Sting left all of his stuff behind on Gabriel's Message mm-hmm. and put a very personal, different touch. I mean, it's, I don't knock Bon Jovi for the song, because I know there are a lot of people who probably really like it. I don't hate it by any means. It's just
right.
a lot that I like better. But to me, it's not really a Bon Jovi song, even though I feel like it's trying to be. And it's also... it's a harsher Christmas song for me to listen to.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, the song itself is problematic, but...
Yeah. But also, pray tell.
Yeah. So the song was written by Clarence Carter. It's funny, because on that same album, A Very Special Christmas, it was actually sampled for Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC, which is really cool. So technically, the song's on there like twice, if you think about it, but yeah, it was written, and it's about a lecherous man, just, I don't know, trying to get his groove on, I guess. I don't know. The nicest way to say it is not nice. So
yeah, to be fair, I will say, I think Christmas rock is one of the harder ones to pull off when it comes to Christmas music.
It is. I think it was easier when, you know, when Bobby Helms and Peggy Lee did it, you know, because it was still kind of that 50s style, which is, which at least, I mean, it was far away from the crooner style. It's at least very similar in harmonic
Yes.
Harmonically, and it's similar. And so
the guitar, the instruments don't drown out or compete with the lyrics and the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on with that. Whereas this one, it feels like it's, you're trying to rock, but it's kind of hard to turn a Christmas song, I don't care what the song is, mm-hmm. into that kind of feel. You know?
Yeah. For me, the song lost me. And don't get me wrong, I love a great 80s synth. But for some reason, when they started off, the mix of the synth is like just ridiculously high. And it's just too loud for the rest of it. And you can see quickly it kind of fades away and then it's just background after that. But I think if they hadn't started with that, if they had let the guitars kind of dominate a little bit more, I think it would have been more successful, because it's basically just a 12 bar blues. That's really all it is.
And I'm trying to remember, Richie Sambora was still with the group at this
yes.
time, right?
Yeah, yes. He was. Okay. Yeah. I don't think he left until late 90s,
like
early 2000s. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, you're right. It was like 2012, I think, something like that.
I don't remember. But I know it's been within this decade. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so he was still there. And, of course, they harmonized well together. I love, you know, Wanted Dead or Alive, mm-hmm. you know, when he, you know, John sings and then Richie comes in with the echo. I mean, gets me every time. In fact, okay, embarrassing story alert, guys. So my friends and I would go to karaoke on Thursday nights in college. And for a while there, we were going like every Thursday night, and I would sing like two or three songs to the point where they started calling me Jerry-oke. but one of the songs that I would do was Wanted Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi. And so I have like a special place in my heart for that song. But
Okay, so your range then must be, well, you said you were a tenor, because I was going to say
I am a
lot
tenor,
of people,
yeah.
I think Bon Jovi actually has a pretty long range if you think about it. He can go kind of high, even though he gets that gravelly kind of sound in.
He does, and is actually singing incorrectly that he they got him, you know, all those throat and vocal problems, and then he, you know, luckily he was able to overcome it. But
yeah,
I mean, I know for a while there it was pretty serious.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does have a pretty high range as well. But his timbre in his voice, it's just something about it, it's different from Sting's, where it doesn't grate on you, at least to me, it doesn't grate
right.
on my nerves as much. Yeah.
So how many other Bon Jovi songs did you perfect in your karaoke days?
Well, perfect is a strong word. I don't know about perfect. That's really, I think I would do that one. And I think I might've done I'll Be There for You. I think those are the two that I did. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of them.
But then I would just do like a bunch of other songs.
You know,
like,
I had this
hey,
in
I
my
like
notes.
That song. Let's do that one. You know.
What's the song? It's about the young couple in love.
Living on a Prayer.
He runs the diner all day. What's
yeah,
the name?
Living on a Prayer. Yeah.
Living on a Prayer. Yeah, that's it. I remember thinking, that's the cutest little love story wrapped up in a rock song.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I was told by someone one time, a long time ago, and generally the case is if you are a Bruce Springsteen fan, you hate Bon Jovi and vice versa. Well, in my world, there's room for both. But mm-hmm. I know that people in Jersey can get a little bit intense about this argument. And I was told one time, and this is pure speculation, but it's nice fodder, is that Bon Jovi was sweeping up in the studio where Springsteen was just wrapping up recording. He asked for some advice, and Springsteen just kind of shooed him away and just said, you're never going to make it, or something like that.
Oh, snap.
But I don't know that really happened. But can you imagine if it did, that, I mean, he probably doesn't even realize it was Bon Jovi that he was talking to at the time, because he hadn't made it and
right.
may not realize who it was now. But, you know, Bon Jovi, he's really become, I think he was nominated for the Rock Hall of Fame. Don't quote
he was,
me.
Yeah, he was inducted. Yeah.
He was inducted. Right, yeah. right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but he really has done quite a bit just for his community with his music and things like that. So, you know, people can say what they want about him, but I definitely think he brought, with his musical stylings in the early to mid 80s, he really kind of set a protocol for what others would sometimes mm-hmm. follow in using that, whatever that mouthpiece is that goes to the guitar.
Oh, the talk box?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, Peter Frampton kind of really popularized
yes.
the talk box. It wasn't until Richie Sambora started doing it in Bon Jovi that people were like, wait a minute, I like that there. And yeah. I think just the way he used it, it was a lot more sparse. It was just for certain little opening riffs here and there. And so it kind of just made it more things more interesting rather than Frampton, who would use it, you know, quite often. Again, no, I love Frampton. So, you know, guys, don't hate me. But I know what you mean. I think he made it a little more accessible, which was nice. But as far as these lyrics go to these two songs, they couldn't be
more different.
Yeah, further apart. I mean, it's night and day. Gabriel's message, it's literally about the Annunciation. You know, that's you know, the biblical event of the Annunciation, where, you know, it says the angel Gabriel from heaven came, his wings as drifted snow, his eyes as flame. I mean, that's some imagery right there, you know.
Drifted snow. Oh, it gives you chills. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then all hail, said he, thou lowly maiden Mary, most highly favored lady, Gloria. I mean, right there, it's like, wow, setting the scene, everything. Yeah. Whereas, and I hate to do this, but, you know, in Backdoor Santa, it says, they call me Backdoor Santa. I make my runs about the break of day. It's terrible. Then he repeats it. They call me Backdoor Santa. I make my runs about the break of day. Ho, ho, ho. I make all the little girls happy while the boys are out to play. Oh, man.
You know, it's like going from reading scripture down to the red light district or something.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, there's some things here and there. I mean, it's just like, oh, wow. It's like barely a Christmas song. It's, you know, the only reason.
Let's call it an adult Christmas song.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. It's Christmas After Dark. I mean, the only real allusions to Christmas in that is, you know, he calls himself Santa. And then he talks about, let's see, that Santa would be in trouble if there's no chimney in the house. But really, other than that, there's not really a whole lot to it.
Well, the difference here for me, I saw, was the time difference of when these songs came out. Of course, Gabriel's message came out at a time and place where, today's traditions just weren't even in view. And so many things have changed during this time, but you're right. They are that drastic, but they're probably appropriate for their time frame. But I will say, and there are other songs about Christmas that, I like Sheryl Crow, and I like her Christmas CD. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember. I think it's with Bruce Springsteen, maybe. I'm not sure. And when Santa comes down the chimney, we're going to get lit up like a Christmas tree. Well, that's talking about partying, you know. You know, there are people that, that's part of their Christmas tradition. It's not
right
a judgment. It's just the way they celebrate. But I think that's also the wonder of Christmas, is that there's room for all of this. There's room for the sacred, to the fun and lighthearted, to the belief of Santa and all that comes with him, to the decorating and to the lights and to the Christmas fun, whatever that may entail. And I think that's also what makes Christmas special. It's that all of these things can coexist together without overriding each other. For me, Gabriel's message wins out just because of its sound, its poignancy, its delivery, and because it was such a surprise with the way Sting was able to get it out. I've seen him perform it just, you know, online, and I feel something with it, you know? Whereas Bon Jovi, I am ready to listen to his music and rock and get in a good mood, but that song is just doesn't quite register for me.
Yeah, same here. Same here. So between the two, I think I personally would give the win to Sting.
Definitely thumbs up to Sting.
Yeah. Oh, well, sorry, Bon Jovi, but you know what? I'll be listening to more of you during non-Christmas times. So there's that.
Listen, I have bought enough of his music that I don't feel like I need to apologize to Bon Jovi.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Why are we apologizing? Yeah,
I've been supporting him for years.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, his greatest hits is really great.
Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites. So, Ricky, I have to ask, what would you say is your happiest moment with the song?
Okay, I'm going to go back on this, and I'm going to feature more of the artist.
Okay.
Because we talked about how Gabriel's Message, that's definitely the song of choice between these two. But I talked about how its arrangement, the feeling, the words, what it evokes, something that's long ago that's been revived again. I'm going to go with Bon Jovi on this, but not a Christmas song. I saw him in concert, and you can imagine an arena filled with, 20,000 people or so?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all rocking out, and it's crazy. And he sings Hallelujah. Well, okay, first of all, that's a song that has been overdone online and covered by everyone and the moon. And of course, everyone's version is different. But rarely have I been in a setting where he can break out in a song and the entire room goes quiet. You're talking 20,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened when Bon Jovi sang Hallelujah. And a lot of people will say, well, that's not a Christmas song, but there's something about it that just speaks to the spirit. And I think that's why so many people choose to cover it. But Bon Jovi talked about being in, I don't know if it was a pub or a bar or just a restaurant, and he heard it covered and he knew it spoke to him. He said he knew he had to do it. And I think that's the gift of the music of that song. And so although it's not technically a Christmas song, and honestly, I get tired of people calling it, isn't that the song from Shrek? and everybody covering it, whether it's instrumental, vocally, mm-hmm. whatever. But I was just amazed. And I stopped and I looked out. And even though the arena was dark, everybody was just either swaying or they had their camera phone flashlight on.
Nice.
It was just dead quiet. I mean, he captured them all with one song. And so I think that's it for me.
Right on. That's awesome. Now, for me, and since you did a Bon Jovi one, I'll do a Sting one. For me, I remember the first time hearing Gabriel's Message on an album, actually, an LP. And I remember I was young, and it was one of those where everything before it was kind of very 80s, you know, the Eurythmics, their Winter Wonderland is definitely 80s, you know, and the Pointer Sisters was like so up tempo. And then I heard this one and it was different. And I don't remember if I was in the living room or in my parents' bedroom, but I heard it and it was like, wow. And I just kind of sat there and I didn't move and I just listened to it. And it was amazing. And it got me. Like very few songs have gotten me.
I totally agree.
Especially at that age. So that's probably would be mine.
That's how it happened with me. So I totally get you on that. And that's the thing about that song. It just surprises you that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if a song can stop me in my tracks, then.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, wow.
Then you know that's going to be a keeper.
Yeah.
But now we come to my favorite part of the show,
which
is a little segment I like to call Gag Me with the Spoon. So this is where we do our best impressions of our least favorite parts of the songs. And we leave it up to the voters, the listeners to vote. And then the winner will get a totally rad Christmas sticker, unless I win, which I guess I get nothing. if you'd like, because I know you're a little nervous for this, we talked beforehand, and I can go first if you'd like. Or
you can go first, and because I think we've already touched on the same thing. It's going to be the same thing. I'm going to let you do it, but.
All right. So I chose, of the two songs, I chose Backdoor Santa to do again, yes. Just because I don't like it quite as much. And it's not that I don't like the song. I just don't like it quite as much. And the part that I thought was the most cringeworthy, as they say nowadays, is the ho, 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 ho part. So he's pretty much sung his lyrics and it just now he's trying to get the audience involved, you know, ho, 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 hey, hey, hey kind of thing, but it just doesn't quite jive. And I think it's just too on the nose using ho, ho, ho and Backdoor Santa to me. Like if he had just stuck with the hey, hey's or something like that, or used different syllables, like, you know, Cab Calloway or something, I think it would have fit more. But for me, so excuse me in my worst, in my worst voice, I'm going to try to do a Bon Jovi here. So it's a ho, 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 ho. hey, and so on and so on. But
Jerry, I just thought
it was too on the nose there. But
that was so good. I could hear him through you on that. That was great.
Well, thank you.
I can't do that.
Well, it's okay. There's no judging here. I've had all sorts.
It's that song, but I don't know. The lyrics are just.
I know. That's why they're a little too risque for me to say.
Well, yeah, that's kind of, you know, we on the Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe Christmas podcast, we keep it non-political. We keep it clean.
I try to do the same.
We keep it non-judgmental. But that was it. You sounded like him. I'm not kidding. It's like you nailed him or something.
Well, I don't know, but thank you. I appreciate it.
But I can't even, the lyrics don't even get me. And see, when I hear the ho, 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 even though he's in his range, I still used to try to hear Santa singing.
I haven't tried
ho,
that.
Ho, ho, you know, like that. Although I've never heard Santa say, hey, 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 because that would be kind of creepy, especially to little boys and girls.
I know, yeah. And especially if you're thinking about the Santa from Christmas Story.
Oh, I tell ya.
Yeah, the whole scene always gets me creepy. but anyway, if you're refusing, that's okay.
Oh, no, that was it.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. So I will leave it up to the listeners to see, to vote who did it better. And, we'll see what happens. Winner gets a sticker.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. You know, I have to ask, G.I. Joe, they taught us that knowing was half the battle. So what would you say is the other half?
I thought about this one and I'm like, of course I want to talk about Gabriel's message because it's like he said, and I think I've just reiterated everything I've said before, but one thing I did go back and do was I remember when a lot of people know that SBMX is located out of Salt Lake City, Utah, where we have the Mormon Tabernacle Choir that does a Christmas special every year.
Every year, yeah.
And this year it's canceled, but I went back.
Bummer. It's a super bummer.
And the melody, I've said it all. I mean, it's the harmonizing. It's the chanting. Like, it takes me back to a monastery and I'm there with the monks. It's all about all of it. Gabriel's message, the way, as you said in the lyrics, describes him descending down. And you can just visualize that in your mind. But for me, it was about Sting. And I went back to an interview that was posted about Sting when he performed with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir for the 2002 Winter Olympics held in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, actually.
Well, okay, so I know this is weird, but that interview gave me a completely different way of looking at Sting. And he goes, when you're performing with the choir, he goes, yes, they're volunteers. Yes, they're in tune. Yes, to musically sound. Yes, to all of that. But he brought out something that I think is what it is with Gabriel's message. He said that when he was singing, and odd thing is, he's not the only one, the only artist that has said something like this when they sing with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. He said, there's a feeling that suddenly just whooshes in and you feel it. And the music is so much more because of that. And in that interview, I looked at him and I thought, holy cow, he's totally serious. Mm-hmm. Which now I know how he connects his spiritual life, his musical life and professional and personal life and his creativity. He tries to mesh all of those together. And I think that's the mark of a true artist when they are being themselves and they're trying to put all of that out there for others. And I think that was probably his purpose in Gabriel's message, whether he realized it or not. Because like you, I said at the beginning of this, I was listening to the radio and then this song came on. I had to stop and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the feeling it gave me. So the lyrics, all of that. So knowing that about him and what went into that song, I think that's what kind of did it for me. That's vague, I know. But if anyone gets a chance to go back and look at that interview, it's actually pretty insightful about Sting and what goes into his music now, especially as he's gotten older.
Nice. Well, that's way better than mine. Mine was, if knowing is half the battle, the other half is to be popular so you can get on a special Christmas benefit album. I'm not as deep. I'm definitely not as deep. I keep things surface level here.
Well, at the time that album came out, though, I mean,
it was huge, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And we think that Christmas music has been popular all through the ages, but there was actually a span. There wasn't a whole lot that came out.
That's true,
Not like it is now. And I think it's the fans that have truly revived it and made a place for, you know, a demand for it. But but yeah, you're right. At the time, you're right.
Ricky, it's been so much fun talking with you. What do you want to plug? Tell me about your show.
Yeah, you know, we're just trying to stay afloat from now to the end of the year. We have a couple more episodes, a regular episode and a bonus episode coming out through late September, early October. And one of those episodes is in the series of Christmas Cures for the COVID Blues. And it's all about trying to ride this storm out together, how Christmas can kind of either boost your spirits or how it can help stretch your budget dollar, because there are a lot of people hurting right now that have been affected by this. So there are a variety of things in that. And we have a bonus episode coming out about a new Santa film from an independent filmmaker in California. But then from October on, every week is going to be something. I just got off the phone yesterday morning and I know a lot of people think we're totally serious in our interviews, and we do talk history and things like that, but we have our lighter side, and this one coming up, I am so excited for it. It's called The Cat's in the Christmas Tree Again. And it's about how many people have cats or pets that once you put the tree up, it's like static cling. There's this natural attraction and you can't keep them out of it. Mm-hmm. The reality is you've lost some trees or precious ornaments and decorations to the cat. The fun loving part of it is it's this hilarious side effect of Christmas that people post pictures of, that the cat cannot resist a Christmas tree. So that's going to be coming up. There's a lot of different ones coming up, so we're excited about it. Of course, Mary will have so much in Christmas news. She's also doing an interview on vintage holiday recipes. So there's this new trend. Everybody's wanting grandma's recipes to have on the holiday table. So we're going to tackle that too. So,
a lot of people have a lot of time now, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Well, that's cool. And where can they find you?
We're on Spotify, Deezer, Google Play, all the typical places where you would find any other podcast. But we suggest, because we seem to get a better response here, is our social media sites, whether it's Facebook. We have a page there, Sleigh Bells and Mistletoe. We're on Instagram and we're on Twitter at Bells Sleigh on Twitter. And you can follow us on all of those.
Right on. Again, thank you so much for being on here. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed talking.
I loved it. And I love getting to know other Christmas podcasters. It's awesome.
Same here. Yeah. I feel like we're all one big family. And so, yeah. So it's always nice to meet a relative that I haven't met yet.
There you go. Brother.
My third cousin. Yeah. But on that note, I'm going to end it by saying, of her, Emmanuel, the Christ was born in Bethlehem, all on a Christmas morn. And check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like old Saint Nick, who don't come but once a year, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.